Robin Hood Radio presents Agriculture from Tucana Farms. Here's Mark Scherzer.
In case Peter made you think that the most serious problem at Tucana Farms has been a rampant imaginary Trumpkin pumpkin vine dividing up our vegetable garden, think again. Rampant, creepy, real vines have been strangling more than just Peter's leg. It seems everywhere we turn this summer, we are fighting a viney invasion. Several of our gooseberry bushes have gone into hiding under a canopy of grapevines. Our seemingly strong and aggressive blackberry canes, especially the ones in shadier spots, are struggling in some places against being overwhelmed by the large dark green leaves of Virginia creeper vine, and are being choked in other places by the winding stems of the leathery oriental bittersweet. Twisting around many of our pole beans and corn stalks are the pale green tendrils of what we call sweet potato vine. And looking groundward, encroaching on virtually every one of our round vegetable beds, is insistent ground ivy. I dedicated a big chunk of last Sunday to pulling weeds in the tomato patch, only to find that my most resistant foe was wisteria vines that have traveled underground via runners from the east end of the chicken coop to pop up and start winding around our brittle tomato plants, which of course grow like vines themselves. The wisteria is almost impossible to pull up by the root, and I often end up just clipping the vine at ground level. At the west end of the chicken coop, the high fencing is beginning to lean under the weight of honeysuckle and white lace vines. The latter grow so prolifically that they practically strangle themselves as they create an interwoven thicket of runners and tendrils. These plants are not invaders. We had good reasons to plant the wisteria, honeysuckle, and white lace vines around the coop, providing shade and beautifying the coop, but never did we anticipate the vigor of their growth or the effect on the fence. The prize for the peskiest and most bothersome viney inhabitant of the farm, however, surely goes to poison ivy. Although it was largely eradicated from our pastures by our cows, who love to eat it, it is seemingly coming up everywhere else, even at the base of the house next to our outdoor shower. Any place a bird might poop out one of the apparently delicious poison ivy berries, up comes a vine. The areas beneath trees, bushes, and tall perennials are therefore prime poison ivy real estate. Much as we try to be careful, it's all too easy when weeding in dense overgrown patches to inadvertently come into physical contact with the poison ivy leaves or stems, or with other weeds that have touched the poison ivy leaves or stems and transfer the oils to us. Try as I may to maintain a shovel's distance from the vines when I'm trying to dig them out by the root, somehow I'm inevitably infected with that itchy rash. A few weeks ago, I had what I thought was the briefest of brushes with a major poison ivy vine I was using a shovel to remove from the garden path. Yet my entire right arm from bicep to wrist was covered in the itchy rash by the following morning. I gave myself a treatment of Tecnu from the tube we always have at hand, but when I was ready to return to the city, I didn't have a second tube to take with me for continued treatment, and I sought other remedies. At the suggestion of our farm helper, also named Peter, I tried crushing the leaves and stems of jewelweed and used it as a compress on the arm. It did indeed provide significant relief. But I somehow left the jewelweed behind when I left for the train, and when I got to New York City, where Tecnu is not easy to find in drugstores, and weedy patches with jewelweed are not readily at hand, I had to turn to other home remedies. I alternated between calamine lotion and apple cider vinegar, to great effect. Within 4 days, the itching and rash had resolved. And in this regard, I was way more lucky than my sister, and also than a husband of a friend of mine, both of whom recently required steroid injections to bring their intense poison ivy rashes under control. Nonetheless, so intense was my itching and so widely had it spread that I wondered if I had become increasingly sensitized to poison ivy with each successive exposure, much like one can react more strongly to successive wasp stings. I suppose it's possible, but it also brought to mind a New York Times article from about 3 years ago, during the final negotiations of the Paris Climate Accord, which predicted that human reactions to poison ivy would intensify over time because of human-induced meteorological changes. According to the article, as the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere increases, poison ivy leaves produce a more toxic variant of the compound called urushiol that causes the poison ivy rash. Controlled experiments growing poison ivy in the atmospheric CO2 concentrations of 1950, 2007, and future projected dates had proven this hypothesis correct. Indeed, the overwhelming vigor of all the vines on our property may also be attributable to increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. In high-carbon environments, poison ivy leaves are not just more toxic, but they also grow bigger, and they suck up more carbon from the atmosphere. And it's not just poison ivy, but all woody vines profit from carbon-rich environments. The growth often comes at the expense of the trees they choke out. Some observers have seen the boost to plant growth, particularly vine growth, as a greening effect of climate change. Carbon absorbed by increases in plant growth have been estimated to offset all the additional carbon dioxide China has spewed into the atmosphere with its industrial development. Unfortunately, the greening effect is not as much a positive as you might think, as explained in a New York Times article this week. Most of the CO2 sucked up by plants during their daytime photosynthesis is expelled back into the atmosphere by a process called respiration at night. There is an important lesson to be learned from these rampant viney invasions, and that lesson is that we have nobody to blame but ourselves. This is not strictly speaking about global warming. The vines are not prospering from the heat, but it's rather directly correlated with the concentrations of atmospheric carbon dioxide. Climate change deniers can dispute the role of human activity in causing rising world temperatures and attribute warming temperatures to natural cycles of warming and cooling of the Earth. But it's virtually impossible to attribute increasing atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations to anything other than human activity. To all those who are working so hard now to return American power consumption to high carbon sources like coal, and to all those who support removing us from the Paris Climate Accords and from any meaningful controls on carbon pollution, I can only hope that you appreciate the effects of your policies. If not, I'd love to have you spend a day with us to help fight back the voracious invading vines. In fact, I'm itching for it.
Peter Davies and his partner Mark Scherzer are proprietors of Turkana Farm, specializing in heritage breeds of livestock on their 40-acre farm in Germantown, New York. Peter also presides over Turkana Odyssey, in which he customizes cultural tours of Turkey for small groups, which he calls an insider's view of Turkey. And his third hat is Turkana Gallery of Old and Antique Kilims, which he operates in the Wall Street area of Manhattan. Mark presides over his law firm, Mark Scherzer Law Office, which specializes in health law, also in the Wall Street area. Their farm website? TurkanaFarms.com. Their email, farm@TurkanaFarms.com, or 518-537-3815.